average of 5 seconds at 55 miles per hour. That's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me, whatever it is, you'll live. Learn more at stoptextsstoprex.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. KPFT Houston.
This is Mary Edgerton, and you are listening to the unruffled beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. That signals 8 p.m. Wednesday and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. And it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm your host, Mary Edgerton, along with an ensemble of gifted hosts. Hank Rubicek, our producer and the show's founder. Greg Audell, and let me say, Greg never comes without Floyd the Wonder Dog. And Warren Holloman, our master of wellness. We also have a very gifted production engineer, media director, and sometime guest host, Tatiana Gago. Tonight, as our engineer, we have a guest, Justin. Hey, Justin, do you have a last name? Hang in there.
Yes. It's O'Neill, actually.
Justin O'Neill. Yes. I love that. It's very Irish. Okay, and we're going to hear from Justin O'Neill a little later in the hour. Finally, a shout out to some of our most recent guest hosts, the dynamic duo Harwood Taylor and Christy Gorman, and Eric Heen. Together with our guest storytellers that we bring on the show every week, we celebrate the magic and the power of storytelling. Speaking of magic, December is a month of magic. The equinox comes this weekend, celebrated since the time of the Druids. And I'm not even mentioning the meteor showers, which I love. Several religious holidays, Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, to name a few. But there's a little something else about December. The days get short and cold. There are days when I think somebody is just putting me inside a freezer and slowly shutting the door of it. So tonight, what we want to do is celebrate stories of connections. We want people who might feel a little disconnected this month to feel connected. Connections between someone new to a city, even a job, the strangers who become your friends, connections across family members. And finally, we are going to celebrate the privilege of having your two front teeth. Remember that Christmas song? It's all going to come together. To take you on the journeys, I have the privilege of hosting a wonderful group of storytellers to the show. Some old, some not so old, and actually, I have someone you have never heard from before, even if you have listened to every one of our radio shows. I welcome here Sneha Desai, Nadia Hakim, Ricardo, a.k.a. Rico Enriquez, Michael Perkins, Ruth Wentz, and Kelly Kells here at the station tonight. Sneha, I want to start with you. Many of you know Sneha, as she's been a guest of several of our hosts here on the radio, and she is a Story Slam Moth winner. Sneha, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I was here last year, same time, doing the same show, and I want to thank you again for allowing me to end the year with a bang.
Hey, we are ending the year with a bang. It's great to have you back again, and I'm glad you mentioned that you were part of that December crew. I mentioned at the start of the show that December can be both a celebratory month, but also a difficult month for people who might feel alone and a little disconnected. Have you ever felt alone and disconnected?
Yes. My next story is actually about that. I moved to the United States from India during a time where cell phones and the internet had not yet become sources of information or communication for me. So when I happily landed in Detroit, Michigan, to attend school at Eastern Michigan University, I was blissfully unaware of what lay ahead. A representative from the International Students Office picked me up from the airport and asked me where I needed to be dropped off. And I said, at the university, with a slightly confused look, because where else would I go, right?
Not knowing that there were many universities connecting to Detroit.
And she said, well, what apartment complex do you want to be dropped off at? And I very confidently told her I was yet to find one and would do so as soon as I got to campus. She didn't say anything, and I guess she knew nothing that she said would help me. In fact, whatever she said would lead to a nervous breakdown. So instead, she told me she would hold my bags at the office while I came back with an address for her to drop me off at. And with a map of the campus in my hand and no one on my side, because I didn't know anyone on campus yet, I trotted off to the student housing office. And after what seemed like a 3-hour wait, but was probably only 30 minutes, I was told that all housing on campus was full and that I would get to go on a wait list. And when they saw my jaw drop, they informed me that something might open up in the next 15 days. And I guess they thought that would make me feel better or something, but it didn't. Because the truth was, my classes were starting 2 days later, and I had been completely oblivious to the fact that campus housing needed to be arranged months in advance.
Okay, a short interrupt here. You came from India to mm-hmm. Eastern Michigan State University. Mm-hmm. You arranged your flight, you were accepted, you had a curriculum, but you did not arrange a place to live.
Yes, my assumption was that I would get to campus and walk into an office and be assigned an apartment.
Okay.
And at this point, I was a homeless student in a foreign country who could afford to pay for college education, but had no roof over her head. So I wandered around aimlessly with the map still in my hand, not knowing what to do. And remember, there were no cell phones then, at least not in my possession. So there were no OMG, help ASAP, texts, or crying emojis that could be sent to anyone. And soon a golf cart zoomed past me, stopped, and reversed back to me, and a guy, Indian like me, asked me if I needed any help. And I was a little cautious. I thought he would start flirting with me, as had been my life experience with the men in India. But something told me that he was probably the only one who on that huge campus had and would ask me about my sad plight that day. So I told him about the tragedy that I was facing that morning. And surprisingly, he offered to ask some of his friends who were girls from India if they could house me for 15 days until I found my own apartment. And I couldn't believe it all when the girls agreed and lent me a blanket and showed me the couch that I would be sleeping on. And I still remember being so much in awe of the small carpeted apartment and the bed in a bag that they were all going to use to sleep on. And the next morning, I was rudely awakened by these women at 7 a.m. and asked to leave the apartment because they were all going to campus for work, classes, and whatnot. And I said, "When will you return?" I asked very feebly, and they said 10 p.m., very bluntly. And so for the next 15 hours, I wandered around aimlessly buying expensive food at the campus grocery store, enjoying the free internet in the library, and pitying myself for being homeless because of my foolishness. And this went on for a few days until I bumped into the guy in the golf cart again, who asked me how things were going. "Not good," I said, and when he heard the details of my experience, he offered to have me lounge at his apartment instead of wandering around during the day. I wanted to jump at this idea, except I was not sure about the fact that he had four other roommates, all boys, in a one-bedroom apartment. So I started thinking, what would my mother say? Would anyone ever marry me after I hung out with five boys at once? Would I be called a woman with no morals? And all these thoughts slowly were shut down when my brain reminded me that walking around on campus in the Michigan cold was not something my body was enjoying. So I decided to try it out. What is the worst thing that can happen, right? And let me tell you, it wasn't so bad. In fact, it was wonderful. These boys, or rather men, obviously were raised right. Not one of them flirted with me. And to be honest, that was a little unflattering at the beginning, but I moved on. And as soon as I entered their home, they would have a hot meal ready for me and serve it to me like I was a queen and they were my slaves. And they did not even allow me to do my own dishes. I asked one of them if I could do some laundry, and he promptly took me to the laundromat, taught me how to use it, use the washer and dryer, and laughed at me for wanting to run a load with just three tops and one pair of jeans. And when I told him that that's all I had brought from India, he borrowed a friend's car and took me to Walmart to buy more clothes, which thankfully allowed me to pay for. And I began to grow close to the same guy who was taking a keen interest in my daily activities because he really cared. At some point, he did fall in love with me, but that's a story for another day. And he asked me if I would consider just spending the rest of my days and nights at the apartment rather than stay with the girls that we also started calling those bitches to wake up at 7 in the morning every day. And I said, "Yeah, but where would I sleep?" Because as far as I knew, two of them slept in the bedroom and the other three in the living room, and they all had assigned days for their turn to sleep on the bed. And he said, "We will figure it out." And here's the solution they came up with. The queen, also known as Sneha Desai, got to sleep in the bedroom by herself while all these grown men lined up their sleeping bags in the living room, four on the floor, one on the couch for the next few nights. It was the sweetest thing that anyone could have done for me. I was no longer homeless. I had homes to choose from. I had people waiting on me. I had a whole bed to myself. Is this what they meant by America is the land of opportunities? I thought. And when student housing called me a few days later to let me know that my apartment was ready, I felt a little sad. I had begun feeling like these men were like my family. And how had I gotten so lucky? I found a little family within days of landing in the United States because a man in a golf cart had a gut feeling that this woman walking around on campus was a damsel in distress. And I had envied other students that talked about having family in town and having meals dropped off for them at their apartments or being picked up to go out and eat or doing their laundry for free. But the universe showed me that I also had angels around me. And when one door closes, another opens. And when I'm sad, as I often am during the holidays, I remind myself of the blessings that I did receive during one of my toughest times. And that's the message that I want to send to the listeners today. Remember, when you feel alone, you're really not alone. We are all in this universe together, and someone somewhere really cares.
Oh, that's so beautiful. That is so beautiful. I just want to take a moment because it feels so warm and comforting in this December month. Nadia, what do you think?
Oh, I love it. Snow White and the Five Dwarves. I just love stories like that where you just find community in an unexpected place at an unexpected time. It's really great.
That's, yes, community in an unexpected place and time. And that's one of the things we want to say tonight is that December can be a cold and lonely month, but you just never know when you might turn the corner and find your dwarves.
That's very true.
On a golf cart.
And you will be Snow White. So, Nadia, have you ever been in the position of finding yourself amongst strangers and needing friends and allies?
Oh, all the time.
But oh, no, don't put it that way.
No, but my story actually focuses on that, but at a new job.
So, yeah, a new job is hard. There's that combination of I'm in a honeymoon mode because I have a new job, and I don't know anybody here. I don't know who are my friends and allies or whatnot. So how do you deal with that?
Well, so I found myself walking this tightrope after freelancing for almost 5 years. So I was having this debate, well, until what point are you considered a witty eccentric? And when do you cross over into too eccentric and mostly inappropriate for the workplace? But let me rewind. Like I said, I was a freelancer, and then I started receiving sad emails from clients. Oh, our grant was dissolved. Oh, our budget was cut in half. Oh, we have to start sending these projects to the intern who can hopefully do something with Microsoft Paint. But I didn't have too much time to wallow in self-pity because my partner and I just submitted an offer on a house after months of searching. So cue the adrenaline, I began applying and interviewing for 9-to-5 jobs. So one January day, we received the keys to our house, and a few hours later, I received a job offer. Cue the sigh of relief. Wait a second. For the past few years, I've only shared an office with my dog. Like, what if I forgot pants? What if I use my dog voice? I have a retirement fund now. Can I just break out into songs from Singing in the Rain? How much should I tone things down? So, a week into the job, we have a team meeting. So it's 5 folks total, including my boss and myself. And we get to the end of this meeting, and they say, thank goodness, let's get to business. How are we going to win the company chili cook-off this year? So apparently they were robbed of first place the year prior, so they were out for blood. Terry had a secret chili recipe. I changed some names around, and I'm not mentioning the workplace, so I'm protecting some identities here. So, Terry.
Okay, I put that as, I usually say I'm not changing any names because there's no innocent to protect, but I'm glad to know that you had innocent people at your company.
So Terry had a secret chili recipe, and so really all we had to focus on was marketing and presentation. So we had to submit a team name by the end of the day. So this was really my chance to show how witty I could be. So I texted my sisters in a group chat, and that's who I always go to when I need something punny. And we began brainstorming, and at some point someone said, Netflix and chili. And everything else was blown out of the water. That was it. So I texted the suggestion to my coworkers, and the first response comes from Ashley, who's closest in age to me, and I can hear her laughing through our shared wall, and she starts knocking on it and shouts, this is amazing! So 1 out of 4. Cool. All right. The second to respond is Terry. He's a little bit older, but he keeps up with all the trends and knows all the references. So he stops in my doorway and says, oh, this is too good. 2 out of 4. Great. Then there's a lag. And Mary comes in a little while later, and she confesses that she had to text her daughter, who was a senior in high school. I get it now, and that is hilarious. 3 out of 4. So Teresa, she's a little more seasoned than us. She's the older one out of the group, and she wanders in with her phone in her hand and just very point blankly says, I don't get it. So we explain how Netflix and chill has become code in hookup culture that does not involve much of Netflix watching. And she says, oh, that is hysterical. So 4 out of 4, we submit our team names and they email out a roster of the teams competing in this chili cook-off and we are all set. And well, so that's what I was thinking until the following morning when I saw the head of HR walk into Teresa's office and sternly say, your team name cannot be Netflix and Chili. We've received complaints. And then the door shut. And then they go into this muffled mode. You know, Charlie Brown's teacher sort of. Mm-hmm. So I start to panic and I draft up a text message to my partner saying, oh, well, it was fun while it lasted. And then I realize, oh, then I have to explain to her that why I got fired, and I have to say, oh, it's because of a chili cook-off team name, and said, well, maybe I should wait until I could just tell her in person. So I was going back and forth on this, and Teresa walks into my office and says, oh my goodness, the head of HR just came and told me that we cannot use Netflix and chili because someone complained. So I played stupid and said, well, what do you mean? Do you think because copyright and all that with Netflix? And he was like, well, no, you know, Teresa, you know what Netflix and chill means. Well, yeah, you invite some friends over and you binge watch a season or two and you just hang out. Well, no, that's not it. And apparently she led him on for minutes until he finally exploded and just said, it's a booty call, Teresa, a booty call. No, you just need to change the team name. No, you know what? It's Chili Flicks now. It's Chili Flicks. And he stormed out. And she was laughing the entire time she told me the story. And so, yeah, that's how our team name became Chili Flicks. After all was said and done, we end up winning for best team name and best all-around chili. And our team looks a lot different from when it was Chili Flicks, but we're still fantastic friends and always laugh at that story.
Okay. I'm probably around Teresa's age. So Netflix and chill is a booty call. I mean, does that mean I can call my special friend and say, how about some Netflix and chill tonight?
No, Mary. That's not how you ask for it, okay? You just say, yeah, let's Netflix and chill and call it a done deal.
That's more okay. Of a verb.
It's yeah. Not a noun. It's a verb. Yeah, it's oh, a verb. God. I got to rethink this whole thing. I kind of liked it as the noun thing, but now I'm feeling really old. Okay. So our previous guest was Nadia Hakim, who many of you have heard on the radio before. Also another Story Slam winner from The Moth and a graphic artist with Houston Healthcare or Harris County Healthcare. And now I'm turning for some education in Netflix and chill from Ricardo Enriquez, who is the iRadio station master at KUHF at HUD.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now that I feel really, really old, thank you, Rico. Thank you, Rico. I'm not going to put you on the spot. I'm not going to say, what's your favorite story about Netflix and chilling, if you will allow me to conjugate the verb?
Yeah.
But I'm just going to go back to connections and real love and loneliness and connections and say, okay, now that you have made everybody aware of my age group, tell us your story.
Well, Netflix and chill is going to be for, I guess, February and you know, explicit details then.
That's love. February's Valentine's Day.
Okay. So no hookup culture.
Right. We'll find another place for Netflix. Gotcha.
Well, let me then tell you about my relationship with Christmas. So I grew up watching nothing but Christmas movies, you know, around Christmas time. And I've always loved it. I've always thought that it was this magical thing where this magical being came down and granted you gifts for just acting the way you're supposed to, right? And in these movies, they have all these wonderful, good-feeling times and people saying, hey, happy holidays, Jack. Merry Christmas, Jill. And it was just so foreign. You know, you walk around to a Walmart at 11 at night and you're not getting no happy holidays. But I loved the decorations. I loved the music. I loved the Christmas spirit and the donations and that giving heart that people adopt during the time. And yes, there's plenty of other holidays to celebrate, but they're so almost temporary. Once you get past Halloween, it's downhill. People sometimes just skip Thanksgiving and go straight into the Christmas decorations, and I'm one of them, admittedly. And so for me, it was always this being in awe of how the world changes and everything gets magical. And I even think Christmas lights are elegant. And I will say for the record that multicolored Christmas lights are not my thing. Feel free to do it yourself, but all white lights, maybe a little dash of red, and I'm there for it.
I like that.
And so, you know, in my Christmas, it was always a good time because it was the one thing I was waiting for all year. In August, if someone played me a Christmas song, I'm drooling until Christmas comes around. My birthday is 4 days after, and I still love Christmas more than my birthday. But, you know, how everyone kind of gets a Christmas list going and they kind of get what they want. Well, I never really did. I always got something similar, or my mom, the prankster she is, she'll give me like just the dumbest dollar store gifts that you can think of. There was one time where she gave me these finger lights that were different colors. What I would ever do with those, I have no idea.
Okay, I just had somebody come over trying to help me declutter my house who pulled out my basket of finger lights and said, what are these?
I should have given them to you.
Not to mention my mother, when I begged for a dog, who gave me playing cards with poodles on them.
That's very specific. Okay. Very specific.
Let's keep going.
But the thing was, is Christmas was almost a bittersweet thing for me. And I love Christmas and I love my family, but my parents divorced way before I can even have memory. I don't have any recollection of them being together. So they divorced somewhere between me being 2 and 5. And I remember growing up and noticing it, but not processing it until I started going to my friends' houses and seeing their parents sitting on the couch together, eating popcorn, dropping us off at the movies together, or the family photos in their houses. And then I started to realize that I didn't have the same thing. And it kind of hurt in the beginning. And my sister, who's 10 years older than me, kind of, not that she didn't want anything to do with me, she did. But when she's 21, you know, you can go to bars, your ID is valid, and you don't want to be worrying about your 11-year-old little brother who wants to play Hot Wheels, right? And so I had a lot of time to myself. My dad was always working, and I didn't live with my mother. So I had that time to be lonely for a long time. And to top it off, my parents kind of had these long periods of time where they had nothing but animosity towards each other. And then there were the small times where they were very cordial with each other. And those were the times that I was my happiest, because I, even though they never remarried each other or anyone else, I felt like, okay, finally, this is where the family thing kicks in. I can see it, but I never actually had it. But what made me happy every Christmas was that they could put all their differences aside for the one season, the one little holiday. And it always touched me because they were doing it basically for me, to kind of just stop with the BS and to actually do something for me. And it was great to see. And it was like little flashes of a family life that I hadn't had. So sometimes I think, man, I wish this was year round, but can't have it. But in those moments of animosity towards each other, that's when I felt my loneliest. Flash forward maybe 20-ish years, and I remember one Christmas, my mom telling me, because I have that birthday 4 days later, you don't get double the presents. Sometimes you just get one big one. And she told me, yeah, your one big present this year is going to be going to Colorado. Heck yeah, that's what I wanted to do because I love Colorado. Colorado has the mountains, the trees, the snow, the high altitude. And during Christmas, it's gorgeous. And I like to snowboard. So I thought, yeah, that's a great present. I'll take it. No qualms, no complaints from me. And so as I'm slowly packing, because I'll pack over a long period of time rather than waiting till the very end, I notice my dad's kind of doing the same thing. I don't really ask him questions because we're very almost too machismo. We don't ask each other personal questions, even if it's about where the other one's going. And so a couple days before Christmas, when we're about to head out, his is all packed, and I gave in. I said, well, where are you going? My mom's just sitting in the back, and she's smiling at me. Well, what's going on? He says, well, I'm coming with you guys. And my heart dropped. And it wasn't because I was sad. I wasn't terrified. A little part of me thought, uh-oh, I don't want them arguing on this trip. But I had never gone on a trip with them before. Not since I could remember. And so my heart dropped out of happiness. And I was like, okay, let's do this. Let's see how this goes. We fly to Colorado. And I don't know what we did. I don't know what was going on for the most part. I know me and my dad tried snowboarding, but he's an older guy and the altitude was getting to him. My mom tried snowboarding and she's a fragile young lady, and so she couldn't do it. And so my sister was in the back taking pictures of all this. Everything in between, I have no recollection of. And the reason for that is because I was so wrapped up and enveloped in this feeling of family. I had never done something like this. I had never seen my parents get along so well for a common goal of how are we going to get to the hotel? How are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? Fly together and drive together and do all these different things together. And I started feeling like, okay, this is actually what family is. And I was just so happy and so wrapped up in the moments, and everything else was a blur. And it started to dawn on me that they did this for me, that it was my day and my gift, and it was something I didn't realize that I wanted or needed. It just kind of happened, and I couldn't help but to appreciate it. And so I know what I'm getting for this Christmas. Shout out to my sister. Thanks. And it's the first time that I've gotten something I've actually asked for, so I'm really happy about that. But nothing is going to compare to the feeling I had when I went on that trip with my family. There's nothing that's going to compare to feeling like a whole piece, like feeling like an entire unit that works together well and gets along together. And part of that gift that wasn't intentional was my family can now communicate with each other. My parents are friends. They're planning on retiring soon, and they're getting separate properties, but they're at least helping each other. My mom's the queen of the internet search engines, and my dad's the king of finding all the bad minute details that need to get fixed that she probably would look over. And they work well as a team, and there's still little moments of maybe a high volume of a voice, but it's for clarity. They want to know what the other one is talking about. And very rarely are there bits of animosity, but those bits of animosity last seconds.
You know, you never know when you're separated or living apart or separated, divorced. And sometimes separated living apart works.
Sometimes it's good to
but I have to say that's just an incredibly heartwarming story about connections. Yeah. And achieving connections.
Love you guys.
Yeah. Reach for your Kleenex now. So we are getting to the middle of the hour. We're going to take a break for station identification, but don't go away because we still have more storytellers to tell more stories. Now, let me remind everyone that we are here on So What's Your Story? Broadcast live every Thursday at 8 p.m. on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston and 91.9 in Huntsville. And don't forget live streaming from kpft.org. We have heard from Sneha Desai, Nadia Hakim, and Rico Enriquez with Michael Perkins, Ruth Wentz, and Kelly Kells waiting in the wings. To our listeners, welcome back. To our regulars here on the show that we have had before, and welcome to the show to any newcomers. We look forward to our weekly show and the opportunity to be an important part of the Houston storytelling scene. In fact, not only are we the only live radio storytelling show in Houston, but we are also an award-winning radio show, and we are very proud of that. Now, there are other storytelling venues in our community, so can you tell us about that, Justin?
Yes. So let's start with our sponsors, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it is a great place to learn about the art of telling. They meet on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, located on 1500 Sunset. There won't be a swap in December because the fourth Tuesday is Christmas Eve, but do plan to join the guild for their first swap of 2020 on January 28th, and be sure to bring a friend. Be sure to visit the guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for information about all the upcoming events. And while you're on the guild's page, why not become a member? It's easy to do online. Also, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008, all listed on the menu under radio program. Don't own a radio? No problem, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and Facebook. We're also on YouTube. We're all over the place. We'd also like you to suggest program ideas when visiting So What's Your Story Facebook page, and be sure to share it with friends. And we'd love it if you like it when you leave. Got guests to suggest? Maybe yourself? Let us know by dropping us a note at story@kpft.org, and we promise to get back to you. Don't forget our friends at the Moth at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of the month, where you'll enjoy some terrific stories. Next one is January 14th, and the theme is adventures. And for our listeners who want to take their storytelling skills to the next level, why not become a member of the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network? Both happen to be staunch supporters of our program. As you might all remember, they awarded Dr. Hank the Trailblazer Award last year for starting the show. By the way, nominations for next year's Trailblazer Award and other awards are due December 31st. Check out the Tejas Storytellers website. Back to you, Mary.
Hey, Justin, thank you so much for that. And everybody, I think this is Justin's first night on the radio, and he is doing a slam down fantastic job. Thank you very much. And we did mention the award nominations due December 31st. And I mentioned that because we are so excited that in this year of 2019, Dr. Hank was our Trailblazer Award winner for starting this show. Yes, yes, yes.
Right.
Very cool. And so put up another cool storyteller. We storytellers love it. Okay, next Thursday, December 26th, we're going to be back on the air. It's going to be Boxing Day, and I want to mention that we should all remember to wish Sneha Desai a happy birthday, because she has the honor of having been born, yes, right around that holiday. So, Sneha, I hope you get lots and lots of presents, but most importantly, I do not want any poisoned apples for our lovely Snow White. Speaking of food, let's talk about how food figures into our connections. Okay, we have Michael Perkins here. Michael, I believe this is your first time on the radio.
Actually, I was looking over the notes, and you were talking about how you met me kind of as a beekeeper most recently, and that was the last time I was here speaking about natural beekeeping years ago. I think I was like 21.
Oh, really? Really? Yeah. Oh, you were here? Oh, very, very cool. Okay, so I've known Michael Perkins since he was in his teens, so for several decades, because he is a very close friend of my nephew. And then more recently, known him as many things, beekeeper, composter.
Yeah, exhibit technician at the health museum.
Yes, and actually that's a very important one. I know the health museum. I love the health museum. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've been talking about connections, and, you know, there's just something about the food in the brain, and food can just lead to great connections between people. I think you have a food connection story.
I do. It's kind of from my childhood up until recently, and it's a story about kind of like the way my father raised me and getting to reconnect with him sort of after the making it through the doldrums of high school. The story ends in El Paso. But when I was younger, I grew up in inner city suburbia, Southside Place, Texas. It's a 9-block city, its own fire, and police force. Grew up across from the park. I was the first kid at the park and the last kid to leave. I was always barefoot. And we lived in a house across the street, and for Christmas, my dad would have us go out to Benihana's and do hibachi Christmas, where they cook in front of you. And they have, you know, do fried rice. You can order your steak, your seafood. And they do kind of like a zucchini basketball. And it's where they take the spatula and they flip zucchini. Cold zucchini, I came to find out later, is the ideal method. And then they had this little volcano that you would have with like onions. They'd build up an onion volcano. And that was really exciting. When we would get home, me and my sister would read The Night Before Christmas, and he would videotape us, and we'd go to sleep, and then Santa Claus would come, and it would be big old and an exciting Christmas with not too much stress. It was all put together for us, and it was a very curated event. Fast forward probably till about just after high school. My parents had 6 kids. My dad had lost his job. He was living at Holman and Crawford, which at the time was from a neighbor of the last name Honey. And I had 6 beehives in the backyard. He referred to it as the asshole of Houston. And it was sort of like where all the development had stopped there, and there was like what they referred to as the Holman Street crack houses. And it was just kind of like tried and tested place. But so my parents were living there. My mom was always good at finding homes. My mom found this really quaint bungalow, and we were living there, and they're with the dogs, and they had the beehives in the backyard. It was kind of a wild place. And so my father was trying to figure out how to have a Christmas that would be sort of a recollection of my earlier childhood. And he found that if he went to Kroger the Christmas Eve, he could get all the seafood for like a quarter of the price. And so he did that, and he got little griddle top, electric griddle top. And so he created what he called Scotty Hanas. And it was a hibachi Christmas where my dad cooked all
the... His name is Scotty.
yeah, his name's Scott. So, yeah, he cooked all the food in front of us, and it was very theatrical, and he's a very animated and charismatic guy. And we loved it, and it was so much fun. And so he would have each one of five brothers and sisters, so everyone would kind of take charge of something. My mom would end up cleaning the whole thing up, which we've since... been better about that for her. So that was sort of a tradition born again. And I don't know, as some people may know, with having big families, and as we grow up, Christmas can get split with the other holidays. Thanksgiving, you know, you gotta celebrate with one part of the family and another part of the family. So I'll be doing that this year. I'll be celebrating in town, and the rest of my family will be in El Paso, which is the next part of the story. My dad, fast forward into El Paso, he now has a job. He's got a house. My mom's moved up with him, and he's doing well for himself, and he decides he wants to have a Scotty Hanna Christmas again, except for this time, but with like the griddle top and... my mom ends up purchasing him the outfit that they wear at Benihana's and gives it to him the night before. And like, we're making the sauces, ahead of time. And they go to Albertson's. They live just north of UTEP. And so Albertson's like flies in fresh seafood. we're like gonna get my brother's super excited and wants to get the perfect picture. People are Instagramming it. You know, it's like, it's a big deal for me and the family. And so the dinner begins and we put our orders in, and he starts out with he puts the zucchini on the table. He's gonna do zucchini basketball. Well, he heated up the zucchini, and so then he's shooting into people's mouths, and I catch one, and it hits me in the back of the throat and burns my throat. And so it's sort of a comedy of errors. And he gets the fried rice going, and at this time he serves the fried rice, and it gets to the point where we're, you know, we've played the zucchini basketball. He's wondering about this, the onion volcano. And so he goes, he says, Michelson is going to come up and do the onion volcano, to which I was not prepared to do the onion volcano. But I get up there and I somehow able to balance all of these onion slices. You cut one slice and then you invert it and stack each one on top of each other. So it makes like a kind of a cone. And then I didn't know how it was going to catch fire. So I grabbed, he had a little squirt canister for oil, and I put the oil in there, and then it starts sizzling, and then I lit the flame, and then nothing. And so everyone's kind of like aghast, you know, looking at me for a second. And I my dad says, hey, there's some 151 in the kitchen. So I run off and to the kitchen, and I come back with the shot glass. And I while everyone's not paying attention, I pour the shot glass in there. And all of a sudden, flames, they hadn't erupted. And
did you singe your eyebrows?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So it goes kaboom, and it shoots up in the air. It's a 7 foot high, flame, and it sucks all the oxygen from the table in a gasp. And that was followed by an eruption of laughter.
That's a true onion volcano. Yeah. Yes, not the normal one you see at Benihana's. Yes. Be careful for that 151 stuff. That's a wonderful story. And to paraphrase Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca, thank you for being on the show tonight. Mm-hmm. I know it's your first night.
Thank you, Mary.
I have the feeling that this is the beginning of a beautiful connection.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Ruth. So, we just heard about father-son connections over food and relationships, connections. What about mother-son relationships, connections, food?
Well, thank you, Mary. I want to tell you about that and why I took back the chore of going grocery shopping.
Oh, I hated that chore. Make it good. Make it happy.
Well, it had been 8 years since I'd even stepped foot into a grocery store. And that was because 8 years prior, I had given birth to our second child. And that prompted my husband and I to reverse our traditional gender roles. He became an official SAHD, which is a stay-at-home dad. And I went to work full-time as a nephrologist, which is a medical kidney doctor doing fun things like dialysis and transplant. Those hours are long, and the demands are both physically and mentally exhausting at times. So I really didn't miss having to go to the grocery. But the problem that I was facing was that I felt my older son growing apart from me. Between the long, consuming work hours and the younger child always having the more pressing needs when I got home, my time with him was dwindling away. In addition, he was never an easy child to get close to. Even when he was in preschool, he used to smile tight-lipped and silently torment me when I would return from a long day of medical training. I would plead for any detail of his day just to feel like I wasn't missing out on so much of his life. You just sat in a box all day and did nothing? I asked in frustration. And then, I just sat in a box all day became the rote answer I would get with a smug smile when I tried to pump him for any information throughout the next several years of his young life. As he became a teen, he literally shot up over me in height, and he began consuming massive quantities. If the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, this pathway must be paved around the age of 12. Soon I discovered the tool to get close to my older son again, the one who was my first baby but was displaced abruptly with the birth of his younger brother and the start of my full-time job. This kid could not say no to food. I started a weekly offer to take him to Whole Foods and let him buy pretty much whatever he wanted. And what followed was pure mommy magic. It starts on the ride there. As I mentioned, he's taller than me now, so he can ride shotgun and play the radio. We open up the sunroof on the kidney mobile, and the windows roll down while I became educated on the works of current pop and rap artists. Occasionally, he'd turn the volume down at a stoplight, as the rare wave of age-appropriate self-consciousness would hit him in surrounding traffic. Once we'd get to the parking lot, we would get out swinging our reusable bags and strut in with our sunglasses on, like a couple of shopping badasses. Our first stop would be the fresh squeeze juices. We'd made a habit that we could each pick out one bottle and drink it in the store while we shop. Even though you're paying for it when you leave, it still felt a little rebellious to open the merchandise before checking out. And that was confirmed by the shock on my younger child's face when he was allowed to come with us one Sunday. We'd trade sips of different concoctions and provide our critiques, and then we would proceed through the produce section. I won't say it's cheap. There is a price to buying your 13-year-old's love. But for overpriced, relatively healthy gourmet snacks, I would get about 45 minutes per week of one-on-one time. No cell phones. We could make fun of the items in the aisles, gobble up hot samples, and stock up on all the stuff that Dad wouldn't normally buy for us. Sure, the trail mix has M&Ms in it, but it's still trail mix, right? So the kid would stock up on pre-prepared food for his lunch, frozen food, coconut chips, cookies, fancy yogurts, brie, gourmet ice cream. At the checkout, we would giggle as the hipster cashier would ring us up. We were still making 13-year-old boy jokes about the chocolate peanut butter balls cereal. Just hope Dad doesn't find the receipt, I would smile. I don't really think my husband would be upset, but nothing brings people together more than co-conspiring against a common enemy. The highlight of the trip is a side hug, with his head coming down gently onto my shoulder below. So for now, 3 Sundays a month since I work the 4th, I have a shopping date with my older son etched in stone on my calendar. Like everything in life, it will change and be no more, as he gets sucked further into the vortex of teen years and chooses his friends and girls over the food options his guilty working mother will offer him in an upscale grocery store. But until then, from almond butter to zucchini muffins, I'm buying.
Oh, that's perfect. Now, everybody, that was mother to oldest son in the older son versus younger son tension. I want to hear from the younger son now about that tension, a different point of view. Go for it, Kelly.
Well, I am the youngest of 4 boys.
And Kelly Kells has been on the show before. He's been on the Moth before. Okay. So
I'm the youngest of 4 boys. And Ruth, I want to revisit that theme for sure, but starting from the point of view of the younger son. So my parents had all boys. I believe they wanted a girl somewhere because, well, my name is Kelly. But to give you an idea of what it means.
And what was your brother's name before you?
Right about Courtney. Yeah. So very hopeful. They were very hopeful. To give you an idea of what it feels like, or what it feels like to be the youngest of 4 boys, basically I was born into a ready-made gang, so I can pretty much say that I've survived being in a gang. As the youngest one, or if you're the baby in your family, you understand that you don't really have any weapons at your disposal. But we always have this one weapon, and it's a very powerful weapon, and you don't want to use it all the time because you need it to work when you need it to work. And for me, that was, I'ma tell mama. Because mama, that's some smoke you don't want in your life. And like I said, this weapon usually almost always works. But I'm going to, 9 times out of 10 it works, but I'm going to tell you that one time when it didn't. So, I'm 7, 8, 9. I don't really know exactly how old. And it's right after Christmas. I don't know if it's like the day after Christmas, the week after Christmas, the month after Christmas, but I can see that the Christmas tree is still up. But for us, I guess that could have been April. But all jokes aside, it was right after Christmas, and my brother had just got a new video game on the Nintendo. And he was really enjoying this game, and he was having so much fun that he was selling it to me. I was like, he was having so much fun. I'm like, dude, let me play. Like, I wasn't even so much of a gamer, a video gamer. And he was just ignoring me, and I guess I was supposed to play my role as the younger brother and just sit back until the game lost its luster, and I'm begging him to play, and he is just filibustering on the Nintendo. So I said, okay. So I said, I'ma tell mama. And like I said, usually that's all you have to do. But he continues to play. So I said, okay, I gotta escalate. So I said, mama, Courtney's not letting me play the video game. She said, Courtney, let your brother play. This fool continues playing the video game. The disrespect. So I'm sitting there with my hand out waiting for him to hand me the joystick. And he continues playing. And finally, when he was good and ready for me to play, which he knew he couldn't keep that up for too long. Finally, when he was getting ready, he hands me the controller. All right. He handed it to me right in my mouth. Knocked out my front two teeth, shattered right there, gone. And I was, like I said, 8 years old at the time, and I might have been a kid, but my teeth were adult. And after I calmed down from the devastation of it all, I remember thinking, like, okay, this is not a really big deal. They're going to grow back like the other ones did. Well, I learned that that wasn't going to happen either. I just also have to say this, my brother, we've talked about this in recent years, and he says that this did not happen at all. And I just want to follow up with his statement that, trust me, you, if your teeth were knocked out, you are going to remember the exact moment and the person who did it. So just wanted to let him speak his piece. But, so I soon after that got them fixed, because my mom was not going to have me looking crazy. So I got them fixed soon after, but it was a temporary fix. Because I guess the permanent one was a little expensive, but, that temporary fix, it lasted me for years. I graduated high school with that same temporary fix. I graduated college and I went to a party school and I partied. All my teeth were still intact. Never had an issue. Graduated college, got a job, had some insurance, had good insurance. I had dental. And I said, you know what? Let's just redo it. Because I got it. And I redid it, basically fixed what wasn't broken. And from that day forward, I continued to have issue after issue. And I could write a book about my teeth. Like, and they always came out for small, lightweight things like eating bread. Bread was my number one enemy. The struggle has been so real, y'all, for real. The struggle's so real. Anytime I see somebody biting into an apple, just directly into an apple, I'm just so envious. Because I have to chop my apples up and I got to eat them like this. Well, after 30 years, because I was 8 and I'm 38 now, after 30 years of dealing with this, just a couple of weeks ago, y'all, I finally got my permanent fix. And ever since then, I have been smiling and I have been taking selfies. And I know it's a thing to talk about people who take a bunch of selfies, but y'all, sometimes those people are taking selfies because they haven't always been able to, or they haven't always had the confidence to, you know, so let those people live. And, so yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago, I got what I consider my early Christmas present. It was early, but a Christmas present nonetheless.
You got
I got my two front teeth. All I've ever wanted for Christmas for 30 long years. And I'm grateful. I called my dentist and told her to listen to this because...
yes, and that's a whole new perspective on eating apples. Well, it is unfortunate. We're just like at the end of our time. This has been so much fun, but don't you dare move. We have a new and exciting show following us. You're going to be listening to our own ethnomusicologist, Flash Gordon Parks. So make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary E., and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, We never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Peace. Gosh, oh gee, how happy I'd be if I could only whistle. All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth.
KPFT makes a difference with real people, real stories, and real voices.
I was put in a room where I was hung by my arms. I was couldn't sit down and couldn't rest all the time with a bag over my head.
Whether it's here